Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
This 10th year of Daily Tech News Show is made possible by you listening to me right now. Maybe you're Mike Akins or Norm Fizikas or Chris Allen, or maybe you're a new patron. Hey, everybody, welcome in Bruno, Adrian, and Dewey. On this episode of DTNS, Apple's going all in on AI, the PlayStation Portal, not as bad as you think, and get the right note-taking app for the right note-taking job. Right note-taking here. This is the Daily Tech News for Monday, November 13th, Monday the 13th, 2023. In Los Angeles, I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Allison Sheridan of the Podfeet Podcast.
And I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
You're right note-taking here, Allison.
I am.
And you're going to tell us about all the note-taking apps. You use a lot of them, actually.
I do. Use them all.
Yeah. And you're generous enough to share that knowledge with us. Thank you for that. Let us start with the quick hits. Google has filed what it is believed to be the first lawsuit meant to protect users of a big tech company's AI product. Google filed the lawsuit in California against three unknown individuals believed to be in Vietnam who have been placing Facebook ads claiming to offer a download of Google's Bard, but which actually delivers malware. In addition, other to the deception involved there, they also use Google trademarks and other intellectual property. Google has been submitting takedown requests, of course, so they're not mad at Facebook about this, but they are filing the lawsuit in order to go after the domain names to stop them from using them with U.S. registrars and shut down the ones they have.
NVIDIA announced plans to offer the Grace Hopper-based HGX H200 GPU. This is an updated version of the standalone H100 accelerator with HBM3E memory, great for generative models. NVIDIA says that GH200 will be used in more than 40 AI supercomputers worldwide. Probably the biggest install will be in Jupiter, a supercomputer being built in Germany that will use 24,000 NVIDIA GH200 superchips interconnected with the NVIDIA Quantum 2 InfiniBand networking platform. That's a lot. Jupiter will be used for climate modeling, drug discovery, and more.
That is. That's a big old... It earned its name of Jupiter. It's huge. I don't know if it's cloudy, though. The biggest e-commerce sales event of the year is not Black Friday. You thought I was going to say is coming soon. No. Singles Day, which just happened last weekend on November 11th, well, centered around November 11th, just like Black Friday has expanded, Singles Day has expanded as well. Alibaba and JD.com both reported growth, although for the second year running, they didn't report numbers, just said things grew. Data analyst Cinton estimated that sales across major e-commerce platforms rose 2.08%, slightly slower than last year's growth of 2.9%. Total sales revenue for Singles Day estimated at $154.6 billion. And as a comparison, last year's Black Friday spending was estimated by Adobe to be $9.12 billion. So Singles Day, definitely
that is
bigger.
Bananas.
Yeah.
That is bananas. Wow. Well, Google has had an option to save any video frame from YouTube video. in Microsoft Edge or Google Chrome, you can right-click on a YouTube video and save the frame in its original resolution as a PNG. It's an easy screenshot, basically. The feature is based on capabilities added to the Chromium engine. I would imagine it would work with other Chromium browsers, like Arc, maybe?
Yeah, probably. I don't know if there's any special browser stuff going on as well. They did only mention Edge and Chrome. But yeah, I think it could work in the others if it doesn't yet. But it's probably not going to make its way to Safari or Firefox, unfortunately. Right. And I don't know if you ran into that discussion last week about the annoying pop-up we talked about that shows up when you close OneDrive, where Microsoft requires you to tell them why you're closing OneDrive. Well, it's gone. Microsoft says it was just a test. Only a subset of users saw it, and it has now concluded its test and disabled it for everyone. Thank you.
I hate it when software gets needy.
Yeah. I understand, like, maybe sometimes asking people, like, hey, do you mind? We're just curious. We're trying to do user data. That's perfectly legitimate, but this thing was doing it every time for users, apparently. So, not good. Well, as if in honor of the host of one of the longest running Apple oriented podcasts in the world coming on our show, both Bloomberg's Mark Gurman and analyst Ming-Chi Kuo released some of their usually reliable indications of what Apple will be doing soon. So, Allison, I'm going to run through them and see what you think. You ready?
Okay.
The first one's the big one. Apple execs apparently think that updates to the next round of operating systems, so iOS 18, macOS 15, watchOS 11, tvOS 18, all the ones coming next year, will be ambitious and compelling in their use of AI. Now, granted, I'm sure if you ask any Apple exec about any upcoming OS, they're always going to say, we believe it's ambitious and compelling. But I think what Gurman's trying to get across here is they're very excited. They're more excited than usual about this one. And supposedly, it's going to feature a lot of generative AI. Gurman says, for example, Siri is going to be able to field complex questions, auto-complete sentences more effectively for you, things like that. There's also mention of integrating these kind of models into Apple Music, say to create a playlist for you, or Pages or Keynote to assist you in your presentations. Allison, how excited does this prediction get you?
Well, one of the things that Apple does pretty regularly is every other update lately has been, you know, the major updates, it's been big feature updates, then a lot of bug fixes, make it work better, cleaner, little bitty updates, and the big updates back and forth. So it does make sense that it would be bigger updates, but this does make me even more excited if they're digging into generative AI and going to have that, of course, be, I'm sure, on board on devices. And, you know, as an Apple user, that's one of the things I appreciate. I'm not sure I would have chosen it completely on that basis, but to be able to have things locally. And I'm guessing they're probably going to dance on the legaler side of, you know, the less dicey gray side of where they train the data as well. So maybe that'll make people happy. I would think that would be really fun to see more of that. And just a smart assistant. I always come back to something Leo Laporte said, where he said, if this is a smart assistant, this would be the worst assistant you ever had, you know, any of these. You know, where you say, am I busy at 10 o'clock? And she says, no. And you say, okay, can you make me an appointment at that time? And she says, when? Imagine if you had a real life assistant who talked to you like that.
Yeah. And they've slowly been getting better at context and things like that. But slowly is the operative word, right? So I think you're right. Gurman does say that Apple is trying to decide how much of this would be in the cloud, how much on device, whether they'd go all one way or all the other. If Apple wants to keep promoting itself as privacy preserving, the more on the device, the better. Sounds like maybe there's a couple things they think only work well in the cloud that they'll want to give you a carve out and a justification for why in these cases we're going to send it to the cloud. I'll be curious to see about that.
You don't suppose they would do that by device, do you? Like if you've got the iPhone 16, you can do it locally, but if you've got like an iPhone 12, no, you're going to have to use the cloud because you just don't have the compute power. But that would be very confusing to users if they did that.
I would almost imagine they would do it by device on platform. Like iPhones can do it on device, unless you have too old of an iPhone, then it just doesn't work at all, right? Because that makes sense to people. People understand, oh, my phone is old. That's why it doesn't get the new thing. But maybe tvOS has to go to the cloud, right? Because that processor is smaller or something, or, you know, obviously your Apple Watch, something like that.
But then macOS maybe can always do it locally.
Yeah, because it's got the best processors of the whole bunch. Yeah. I know a lot. In fact, I think it was Nick with a C was like, oh, save us from the AI bubble. I doubt Apple will come with something that is fluff. I think if they're going to tell us about a large language model, they will tell us about it in a way that doesn't use the word AI. They go listen to their keynotes. They almost never say the word AI. They talk about models. They talk about features. So I would expect them to come out and say, in the next operating system, Siri is going to be smarter and she'll understand what you're talking about, or he'll understand what you're talking about, and stuff like that. So I'm curious what these ambitious and compelling features are going to be.
Not only do they not even say AI, and a lot of times they don't even say features.
Yeah.
They describe the life experience that you'll have,
without
saying, you know, you'll be able to communicate. You know?
It's like you're just having a conversation with Siri. Also, a couple other things here. Gurman says Apple will allow sideloading of apps in the EU sometime in the first half of 2024. This is more a prediction about when it will happen. It's going to happen. It has to happen because of the EU law, the Direct Markets Act, will require Apple to allow sideloading. How it's going to happen will be very interesting. Gurman has mentioned that there could be a fee involved for app developers to get on the sideloading verification list. Apple might be able to do something where they say, well, we're not going to allow just anything on for security reasons, but we will allow sideloading for a very small fee if developers run through our verification program, which would be a way of recouping some of the money they would lose from the App Store. What do you think of this?
Well, just to clarify, what we're talking about here is this is on iOS and iPadOS. Obviously on macOS, you can already sideload anything you want.
Sure.
I'm trying to remember, have we broken away from where Apple said, sure, you can sideload apps, but then you still have to pay us 27%?
That's not sideloading. And that's a really good question. Sideloading is I can go straight to a website, say, give me that app, and it downloads.
Never through the App Store.
Yeah. What Apple has allowed in some cases is a third-party App Store. Right. Or a third party payment processor, even better. In fact, I don't even think they've allowed a third party App Store, but they have allowed a third party payment processor. So you're still in the App Store in those cases, but your payments could go through somewhere else. And that's where Apple says, well, we're going to take a lower cut.
OK.
But I don't think anywhere they let you go directly to any website and download an app and install it.
Right. You can now do web apps pretty easily, but
that's a different thing, right? And that makes it confusing too. I'm glad you brought that up because some people are like, well, I've done Fortnite that way, or I've done the Financial Times app that way. And it's like, no, you really haven't. You've done a web app, and Apple does allow those, oddly enough, without any kind of verification or anything else, right?
When they would love you to just take that as the answer.
Yeah.
They've tried that a bunch of times going, you can make web apps. Go ahead. That's fine.
Developers don't love that solution. It works, but it's not the smoothest solution. All right. Those are the two Mark Gurman ones. The Ming-Chi Kuo announcement is probably the safest bet. Apple's going to have new iPads next year.
What?
Yeah, I know, right?
Stepping out on a limb.
But specifically, he said there will be a 12.9-inch iPad Air at the beginning of the year, and that the iPad Pro will get OLED screens and an M3 processor in Q2. There are a lot of other things in there that you'd expect, but those are the standouts.
Anything they do to simplify the lineup is what I would ask them to do. Like, don't even give us new ones. Just make it where you can tell what this iPad does and how to use it.
Yeah, this does the opposite, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I created a diagram last week that was just trying to show you which pencils and which authentication method work on which of the iPads. And it was phenomenally complex. It took me like 3 days to draw the diagram.
Yeah. And Howard's like, didn't they do that a year ago? They did a 12.9-inch iPad Pro. This would be a 12.9-inch iPad Air.
What makes it an Air?
Yeah. I think that one of the reasons I like to talk about what Mark Gurman and Ming-Chi Kuo say is that they tend to relate to what's actually happening. When they are wrong, it's often because Apple changed what it was going to do, not because they were wrong when they found out the information. But I was wondering if we should start like a Google Doc where we keep track of these. and just, you know, hold to account. Like, all right, how good are they?
Well, then we'd have to do like a sliding scale, maybe the way you do it when you do your year-end predictions of what does ambitious and compelling mean?
Yeah, right? What qualifies, right?
Yeah, do they get a 1, 2, or a 3 on that one?
Yeah, no, I like it. If you think we should do that, send us an email, feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. Maybe we'll put something together. Sony's PlayStation Portal launches on Wednesday, November 15th, for $199.95, $200. It streams games using Wi-Fi off your home PlayStation 5. So it doesn't do anything on its own. It has to have a Wi-Fi connection, and your PlayStation 5 has to be on, connected to Wi-Fi as well. And, well, I guess it could be Ethernet, but it also has to be logged in. It doesn't do any cloud streaming. It doesn't run anything locally on the device. The reviews of the Portal are in, and the pros seem to be that it feels better than it looks, because it looks like someone chopped a controller in half and glued it to the sides of an LCD screen. But The Verge's Antonio Di Benedetto likens it to an 8-inch LCD between two halves of a standard DualSense controller, is basically what I just said, but said it plays well. That it works. You kind of forget that it looks so odd. The cons from a lot of these reviewers are that it doesn't do anything than remote play your existing PS5. So you need a PS5 if you want to use this. You're not going to buy this on its own. And basically the general impression seems to be it's pretty good at what it does. It's a little expensive for what it does. But if it's something you want, well, it does it, you know, and it's not a disappointment at that. I think people came in with low expectations and were surprised to find it like worked well. Roger, I know you were looking at a lot of these reviews. What did you make of them?
So in my view, it seems a bit of an odd product, mostly because of what you listed. It is essentially a second screen for the PS5. It's not a cloud gaming device. It's not really intended, or at least Sony hasn't explicitly said that it's, you know, you can take it to your aunt's house and you can play over the Wi-Fi and connect to your PS5 remotely, which you can do, but some of the reviewers experienced some lag in doing so. I mean, and that's on top of a, you know, $200 on top of a $500 PS5 price tag, so that's $700. Now, PC Mag noted that when you compare it to using, say, PS Remote, and like if you have a flagship phone and you use like an aftermarket game controller, it looks better that way than actually playing on the Portal in terms of visual fidelity. And my question is, well, if it's $200 and it's really just about not someone hogging your main screen, couldn't you just use the $200, go to Costco and buy a second TV and then use that?
That's not portable. PS5?
It's true, but this is portable around the house. Yes, you can take it outside, but you know, you're not jumping on your subway ride and then playing that way.
Could it be maybe like for dorm rooms where you don't have any TV at all?
Well, and that's the thing. It's, again, $200. You still need to set up the PS5. So
if you have a PS5 in the dorm room, chances are you've hooked it up to a TV.
But
if you,
would you
bothered
have to
bring it at all. But you're not going to really be able to use it with the portal, because the Portal isn't like a second television, right? It's just accessing the games. Yeah. So to set up the PS5 and log in, you'd still need that TV, I guess. That's a good question.
This is so, a weird product.
Yeah, it is.
And so, for me, it brings up the question. I have a feeling it actually probably did a broader range of things, but either because of they needed to meet a price point and maybe potentially copyright issues, they just slimmed it down to this, because the hardware inside seems a lot more capable of doing a fair bit more than just being a second screen for a PS5.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't have a lot of storage or anything, but it could access a cloud service given the hardware that you have.
Yeah.
It just doesn't, but it could.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm wondering, maybe down the line, is this something that they give a firmware update to? And in that scenario, this actually becomes a much more compelling product. As it is, if I had a PS5, I would probably spend the $200 on another TV. or a used TV, because you can get a 4K TV. My dad just bought one for $300 at Costco, and it was like a 46-inch TV. So,
but again, you know, if you're like, I want to be able to choose which room or where I'm going to play, you can't pick up the TV and carry it around. That's the only difference. Otherwise,
I've got it. It's for playing at the dinner table.
Yeah,
this is probably geared more for kids who tend to be a little like my kids are with their tablet. They literally orbit the house in five different rooms every day with the tablet, because that's what kids do.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, folks, if you have feedback about anything we get to on the show, there's lots of ways to get in touch with us. You can talk to us on X, DTNS Show, Mastodon. We're also DTNS Show on mstdn.social, Daily Tech News Show on TikTok, and DTNS Pix, DTNS PIX on Instagram and Threads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high volume, high speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
I'm an iconoclast in that I mainly use a very simple text editor for my notes, but most people like themselves more than that, and so want a more capable note-taking app. Allison has been searching for the perfect note-taking app, and while she hasn't found the one quite yet, she has a great overview of what note-taking apps are good for which uses. Where should we start?
Well, I kept thinking that there was the perfect note-taking app, and I think it's like, have you seen people who are looking for the great Getting Things Done app? And so instead of getting anything done, they just keep testing new apps for that. Well, it's sort of in the same category, but I've realized over time that maybe the right answer is the right app for the right type of note. And this, of course, creates the worst problem, which is I have no idea where any of my notes are. So I'm not actually saying this is good advice. But what I started realizing was
a Getting Things Done app to tell you where all your note-taking apps are.
Wait, I could do an Airtable database that tells me where each app, each note is.
Easy.
Well, so the first thing I do is Apple Notes seems like the obvious thing because I'm an Apple person, right? Sure. I've got it on all of my devices. But I tend to use it for stuff I don't care about. I've got a couple of notes in there that have been going long playing, but in general, it's like I just need to write something down. I just, I'm going to do a grocery order for three things when we're out on a vacation. I'll just slap it in there. So it's my throwaway notes are actually in Apple Notes because I don't find the organization very good. Collaboration's terrible. There's a way to do it, but like depending on how you send the link, it gets to them or it doesn't. I don't think it's a good app at all. I know people love it, but I don't.
Yeah, so, I find it interferes too much. I need it to be simpler. Yeah,
and changing fonts, anything you want to do where you're actually trying to make like bold headings or anything, it's a whole lot of clicking and ick. I don't like it.
So, all right. So you, so that one is because it's there, you use it.
Yeah.
What's, which one's next?
One of the things I did a long time ago was I started using something called Keep It from Reinvented Software. And this is an app that allows, think of it as an Evernote clone. This is where I put stuff I actually have to remember. For example, remembering all of the different things I have to do to be on Cord Killers. That note is stored in Keep It because I'm going to need to go back to that and modify it each time you guys change everything. So that's my, you know, I put programming notes in there. I put things I'm trying to remember on my blog of how I've set up my database or something like that. That's long-term storage. Important stuff goes in there that I'm going to need to get back to.
Okay, that would make sense to me. Yeah, that's a like, oh, how do I do this thing? Keep It. Keep It has it. You could put a list of all your note-taking apps and Keep It.
Exactly.
All right, what
Magic
next?
Decoder ring.
Yeah.
Well, if I'm doing something like I do this show called Chit Chat Across the Pond Light, and let's say I'm going to have Tom on, and I'm going to want to write a little outline of what we're going to talk about. Secret here is I write the show notes or the outline for it with the person I'm going to talk to, and I sound like a brilliant interviewer because I already know what the person wants to answer. So it sounds like I'm just off the fly, off the cuff, thinking up these great questions, but they've already told me what questions. Collaboration in Google Docs, only way to go. So that's why I do all of those there.
Okay. And then tell me about Notability, because I know you use that one as well.
Yeah, Notability is a real interesting app to me. The primary place I use it is on my iPad. It works on the iPhone and on the Mac. It's a real terrible app on the Mac, but you can get to your notes at least. But I use it for some real specific things. Because of the pencil, I find it a really good way to knit and cross-stitch and crochet. So patterns are often difficult. Like right now I'm doing a cross-stitch project where it's all the little squares and they got little colors in them, and it's really hard to see. The one I got was very small. So I took a photo of it, color corrected it. First time I didn't, and that was terrible. Color corrected it so I could match everything up. And now I can zoom way in and with the pencil just go dot, 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 dot on the ones that I've already done. And it makes it really easy for me to do a better job keeping track of that. But I also use it to rewrite things like my knitting patterns, where the pattern itself is confusing. So I'll write it out, or I might copy and paste it into there and type it again and get it organized so that it's easier to read. But the other thing I use it for is when I want to think. So writing, if you write with a keyboard, it's harder to think because you have to think about how I'm going to format. Am I going to indent them? Am I going to put a bullet there? Is that going to be an italics or whatever? You get yourself wrapped up in that. So I use it for programming a lot. When I'm trying to figure out some code, I'll sit down in a chair away from my computer and I'll handwrite pseudocode, and it helps me to think instead of type. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. So this is for knitting and coding. The Notability app.
Which might come up later.
I love that. And then Google Docs for collaboration. Mm-hmm. What next?
So sometimes I just need to type something or paste some text. I just need it to splat somewhere to hold on to it for a minute. Like maybe I'm going to write the same thing to three different people and I want a place to do it. I use something called Cot Editor, C-O-T Editor. And its main most wonderful thing is when you open it up, it's empty. So you don't have to answer five times. Yes, I want an empty doc. Yes. No, a new doc. Yes, an empty doc. No, I don't want a template. I just give me a piece of paper. And so it's a little bit easier than text edit built into the Mac, but I occasionally throw that one in there too. But it's just real easy to slap in some text. It is a text editor, so I look at it for some coding stuff too. But mostly it's splat in some text, look at it, see if it's what I want.
I use text editor exactly the same way you use Cot Editor, which is I want all the formatting off. I just want to write something in there without any formatting, and then I'll put it wherever I'm going to put it and format it later. So this one speaks to me. I'm going to have to check out Cot Editor. What about your next one? We still got time for a few more.
Okay, so I write about 5,000 words a week for my blog, and I start my rough drafts in Bear. And Bear is a beautiful little note-taking app for Markdown for the Mac. And actually, it's cross-platform, so it's on the Mac, the iPad, and the iPhone. And its best feature is it supports Text Expander. So I can write my Markdown notes. I can type very quickly and efficiently because I'm crazy about Text Expander. I can sit on my iPad sipping my coffee in the morning, or I move over to one Mac or the other Mac, constantly syncing perfectly. It's fabulous for writing my blog posts. But I need to do a lot of special formatting in the end so it doesn't end there. That's kind of where I start my blog post. Then I move over to an app called Mars Edit from Red Sweater Software. And that's a place that I can easily import images and make my fancy little figures that I put in and format things and put in all the blog-related metadata. And then that's what actually goes up to my blog. So those two kind of go hand in hand, but yeah, Mars Edit doesn't run on the iPad and doesn't, and so I can't use it there, and it drives me crazy.
And then you use sticky notes too, like the virtual sticky notes. I don't know. Maybe you use the paper ones too. I don't know.
Well, I actually do a couple of those, but yes. And its main use, I would say, is probably when talking to you. I have a sticky note up with all the things I need to remember to say, and I want to be clever quickly and sound like I had this just in the top of my head, but I've actually written it down, like my question about the PlayStation 5 and all that. It was, I had it in there when I was on Cord Killers. I had a bunch of little things I wanted to make sure I could say and sound articulate, which I don't always sound if I talk off the fly. Also use it for the Clockwise podcast because I got to be able to answer succinctly in 2 minutes each of the questions.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, we'll have links to all of this in our show notes, dailytechnewsshow.com. And of course, Allison, you do great tutorials and show notes of your own over at podfeet.com. So I know people can go there for some resources as well.
Thank you. I wrote up write with a pencil when you want to think. That's one of my favorites.
Fantastic. All right, let's check out the mailbag. Tim is worried about Amazon possibly, reportedly considering shifting from an Android-based operating system, which is what Fire OS is now, to a new one supposedly called Vega. Now, according to the report, Amazon would start with the Fire TV, but eventually shift everything to it, including tablets. And that's what really has Tim worried. Tim wrote a lot, but this is, Tim, I hope you'll forgive me for, crushing it down to the essentials. Tim says, my family and I have owned about 20 plus Fire tablets from the first to the latest models. So I have thoughts on Amazon ditching Android. Amazon Fire tablets have two primary uses for a cheap tablet. One, it's relatively easy to sideload Google Play Store onto a Fire tablet and have access to almost all Google and other apps available in the Play Store. Two, the parental controls are excellent for setting up child profiles, limiting internet, game time, even filtering what specific books or videos they have access to from Prime. So Tim's worried that if he sticks with Fire, he'll lose a bunch of those apps that he uses out of the Google Play Store. But if he switches to an Android-based tablet, he would lose those great parental controls that he has right now. I don't know if I can speak to parental controls on non-Amazon Fire tablets. Maybe somebody out there can. Feedback at dailytechnewsshow.com. But in hopes for the apps, it might not be as bad as you think. Maybe you don't use quite as many apps from the Google Play Store as you think. Maybe you could get by with a few fewer than you think. If that were the case, the one thing I did see is that supposedly Vega is using React, which is the same thing that Android and iOS use, to make it easy for developers to create cross-platform versions of their apps. It is kind of one of the ways that smart TV operating systems survive. The fact that you have any apps on a smart TV is probably down to React, because it's easy to take those apps that you've developed for another platform. It's easier, I should say, to move them over there. So I do not abandon all hope yet, Tim. Maybe it won't be as bad as you think.
That does sound a little bit dicey, though. If I mean, the Android tablet market is so small as it is. And then if one of the main ones is cheap Fire tablets, and then Fires are no longer on Android, are people going to work to write a cross-platform app in React to get it to go across to those?
Well, yeah, that's a great question, because most people don't realize when they're using an Amazon Fire TV or anything, an Amazon Fire tablet, that they're using Android. Most people don't know they can sideload Google Play on there. So when it switches, that switch is going to have to be seamless, right? It's going to have to keep all the apps that they already have. And I'm not quite sure how they're going to do that dance. They seem confident that they can get the developers to do it. So maybe they have an easy way to do it. I don't know.
I'm not thinking people who buy $60 tablets are the big money makers in buying apps either.
Yeah, not in buying apps, in buying services, right? So what Amazon needs to do is make sure that they keep those $60 Fire tablet users subscribed to Prime.
Yes, that's the ticket. Yeah, you're right.
And the kids service and all of that. Well, thank you, Allison, for being here. This is great, as always. If people want more of what you've got going on, where should they go?
Well, podfeed.com, of course, is the best place to go. But I want to draw your attention to Chit Chat Across the Pond number 777. I interviewed a woman named Angela Preston who has done the coolest thing. She created an open source knitting font using an open source tool called FontStruct and then built a Google site. Now, this is a weird thing, but it's a way to translate text-based patterns for knitting into diagrams that make it easier to follow what you're trying to do in the pattern. It is the greatest crossover of knitting and nerdery that I've ever seen. There's probably three people. It's like me and Zoe and Angela, maybe, who all care about this, but it's really cool. It was a really fun interview, and she's great. And because we got together, she's a PC user. I was able to help her figure out how people can install this on a Mac because she didn't know how to do it. And so now we've got an even better collaboration going. It was really, really fun.
Sir ATW says, I'm right there too. So yeah, the group may be bigger than you thought. Who knows?
All right. There you go. Gotta love it.
Excellent. Folks, go check that out. Podfeet.com. Patrons, stick around for the extended show. We're not done yet if you're supporting us directly. Allison sent me a picture of someone charging their fish. It's exactly what it sounds like. And wondered what things that are perfectly normal to say now would have sounded extremely odd in the past. Like, I got to charge my book before our trip. So we're going to talk to Allison about why she was charging a fish and what other weird things that we take for granted now. You can also catch the show live Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern, 2100 UTC. Find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. Back tomorrow talking about Android adoption among teens with Will Saddleberg. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.